The following podcast contains explicit materials. It's Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. From Slate, it's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. And now that the madness of March is over, we bring you our traditional closing song. But this year, we ask that the moment shine so brightly that the glare overwhelms anything else you see. Coaches tipped or flat out bribed. The phone is tapped. It's the FBI. The backroom deals and agents' fees. It's easy to forget all those guilty pleas. One shining moment's a basketball game. One shining moment erases the shame. All right. I've had a request that I move on from sports to news events.
Caravan.
Oh, there's a caravan in Mexico. It was on Fox and Friends, so now you know. Okay. I like Van Morrison too much to ruin him, but you understand where I'm going with this. On the show today, I spiel about David Shulkin, a man who was wronged. He used to be from the VA. He tried to praise his way out of it. It did not work. But first, friend of the show, Maria Konnikova, is coming by, possibly best friend of the show, just by tenure and length of service. We're going to talk about parabens, which Nick Kristof was a little freaked out about. Should he have been? Well, the name of the segment is That Bullshit? That's a nice framework to find out. This episode is brought to you by the Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about the Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort, and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters in hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So as you know, in my life, what I like to do is ingest information and assess said information for veracity and persuasiveness. I turn to the pages of the New York Times, the op-ed pages, about information about all the horrors of the world and possibly international policies. Nick Kristof is a very good columnist on these issues. But recently, he's been focusing his attention on other things, which is the suntan lotion he slathers on himself, or the fast food he eats, or the scotch-guarded, stain-resistant couch he sits on. Kristof has gone possibly off the deep end, getting his urine tested to see how scented candles may be killing him. So in this ongoing series of our feature, Is That Bullshit? With Maria Konnikova, I've asked Maria to come on to check up on a couple of the chemicals that Nick Kristof has been worried about. Hello, Maria. How are you?
Doing well, Mike. How are you?
I'm well. So we talked about receipts, which contain a chemical, but we all understand receipts. And today, I think we want to talk about some deodorants, some soaps, some hair gels. What are the general categories for what's dangerous about hair gel, other than, you know, it could give you a dangerous swoop in your hair?
Christoph very nicely provides this little chart for you about possible things you're exposed to and what you might be using that will expose you to that. And under this, he has parabens, which are actually a type of antimicrobial. So there are two categories here that are contained in things like cosmetics and your personal care products. And then you've got things like toothpaste, deodorant, soap. So things that you're theoretically using to kind of be clean, smell good, and be...
like not have your teeth fall out of
your head. Exactly.
So your teeth might stay in your head, but your body might be racked with hormones. So really we're talking about the category of antimicrobial. There is a subcategory, parabens. He makes them, he turns them into two different categories, but we're talking about antimicrobials.
Antimicrobials, including parabens, because there's been a lot of work on parabens because parabens are very frequently used.
What is an antimicrobial?
So an antimicrobial.
Don't tell me it's against microbials.
It's like it's against microbials. That's exactly right. So there are microbials that crawl around. Yes. So antimicrobials are antibacterial agents.
Okay. What antimicrobials are in toothpaste?
Things like parabens and things like triclosan sometimes.
Triclosan.
Yes. It's fun to say. So it's just things that basically will prevent fungus or other things from growing on these products, give them more shelf life, and generally protect them against bad things happening.
Okay, so now I understand. I thought for a second maybe there was something in my toothpaste that wanted to kill microbes on my teeth, but that's not what it is. The microbe they're attacking is just a preservative for the product.
Yeah, they're more preservatives. Okay. Although in some toothpastes you do have, you know, things that do want to kill microbes on your teeth too.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're talking about.
If any of this is in Tom's domain, I'm going to be so upset.
So just to kind of back up a little, parabens have been in use in these types of products since the 1930s, roughly. So we've had almost 90 years of using these in our cosmetics. So when you do makeup in the morning, when you're putting on your makeup.
Yeah, my foundation, my
blush. Your foundation, your blush.
I'm more in autumn, you know?
Okay.
Also, I like to address my T-zone. I have combination skin. So anyway, but go ahead. I don't want to turn this into that.
When I started looking into this, because I didn't really know anything about parabens, the first thing that I read said so they can be ingested, they can be inhaled, and they can be dermally, so through the skin, absorbed. So these are kind of the main ways that you interact with these sorts of personal hygiene products. So it makes perfect sense. And so the first thing that I read that kind of reviewed the data from the 1930s called them among the safest and most tolerated preservatives. And
yeah,
so
but
I was
you could probably also read a brochure saying asbestos, the substance of safety.
Yes. So this one was from 2015, but yes. So I was a little bit, you know, curious, why do people think that this is actually bad? With a lot of these toxic chemicals or potential toxins, people are worried a lot about, we've talked about endocrine disruption and fertility. So there are problems, growing problems in fertility around the world, and people are worried that it's because of these kinds of chemicals in the environment that are disrupting our ability to procreate. And so it ends up that with parabens, this is one of the main fears. And so one of the studies that I found that was done recently was actually done in a male fertility clinic. Are they called fertility or infertility clinics?
It depends on their bent.
Okay, so infertility clinic.
Yeah, they're trying to cure infertility.
Okay, yes. So this was a male infertility clinic. And they basically measured their hormone levels of these things by urine samples, because by now we know that urine samples are kind of the way to do this, and blood samples.
They're the gold standard.
Yes, and blood samples. So we're going a step above.
You missed
my joke. I did not miss your gold standard joke, Mike. I just decided to talk over it.
They're the golden standard. Okay. Anyway.
so they took measurements at various points in time for people who were going to get their sperm tested at this infertility clinic, and they found no association between the levels of the hormone that they were actually able to detect and the quality of the semen.
Okay.
So there didn't seem to be any tie there, but they found that there could potentially be a tie, but they said be very cautious because very small sample,
right,
and it's very small, this link, to sperm DNA damage. However, we run into problems right away because first of all, low sample size. Secondly, small association. Thirdly, with all of these toxic studies, it's really difficult to know exactly where the exposure is coming from, how long it lasts, any of
these
things. It's
hard to do a control. Do 1 month with using your hair gel and 1 month with using Colgate Total toothpaste and 1 month without.
Exactly. So I think the bottom line is that in 100% of the people they tested, there was some exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a single man in this infertility clinic who was not exposed to it in some level. So
Toms of Maine users.
Probably even Toms of Maine users, because who knows, maybe their shampoo is not quite Toms of Maine.
Oh, that would be weird though. It would be like a weird product mixing to go Toms of Maine with your toothpaste and then just dippity-doo with
maybe,
your hair gel.
Maybe. Everyone is exposed.
Yes.
And there's been very little evidence. In fact, this particular paper said that we should have a, quote, considerable degrees of trepidation when we are talking about any sorts of conclusions that we take from this data.
So it seems like there are two things to point out with this study and maybe others like it. One, they found the presence of antimicrobials, but they couldn't find a correlation between that and at least infertility, right?
Sperm
and
quality.
And the second thing is they had a very hard time. So if everyone has these antimicrobials, it seems hard to trace it back to a specific product that
supposedly gives us
antimicrobials.
Yes. And in
it wouldn't give us antimicrobials. It would give us elevated levels of parabens or something.
But in the most recent review that I could find that looked at all of the studies they could find, it seems that the worst case daily exposure is less risky than naturally occurring endocrine active chemicals or EACs. So it ends up that there are lots of things like parabens and antimicrobials in our food naturally, and that they are actually giving us much higher exposure than any of these additives. So, for instance, soy, sunflowers, most legumes, tons of grains, over 300 different foods have these sorts of things.
So basically, this is health food. You just named like the three pillars of what health food is.
Yeah. So if you're eating
tofu, is much worse for us than Colgate Total toothpaste.
Yes. Yes. That was
Colgate tofu toothpaste would be the real killer.
Exactly. So that was in fact the conclusion of this massive review.
Ugh.
At the end of the day, you have to realize that there are potential toxins and endocrine disruptors and all the stuff in the environment already everywhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is naturally occurring. So natural doesn't mean good, and chemical created by, you know, evil pharma doesn't mean bad.
Yeah.
Because there are things that are created by humans that are good and natural things that are quite toxic.
Yeah.
So that's number one. So we're just surrounded by this. And number two, when you study this stuff in rats and mice, et cetera, the levels needed to have any sorts of disruptive effects are so incredibly high that to mimic the same result in humans, we would need to be ingesting just massive amounts of this. And so it's not to say that you haven't had links to endocrine disruption, cancer, et cetera, but to say that in the amounts that we're exposed to on a daily basis, there's not enough evidence. It's really inconclusive. And the studies that we do have, the data just could be all over the place.
But let's bottom line it here. If I had a peanut hair gel, should I be more worried about the peanut or the hair gel?
The peanut.
The peanut. All right. Blame the peanut.
Blame the peanut.
Okay. So let us construct our patented question. Worrying about the antimicrobial, including paraben content of products like hair gel, Colgate Total toothpaste, deodorants, lotions. Is that bullshit to worry about them?
Yeah, that's actually pretty much bullshit. And I would, for one, much rather that you smell good and have good oral hygiene than avoid these products because you're too scared of their antimicrobial potential disruptive properties.
Yeah, there is Nick Kristof is not addressing this sufficiently. I agree with you that there is a societal good to smelling good that he's just totally glossing over in his feverish pursuit of the paraben among us.
Yes, this is absolutely right.
Maria Konnikova is the author of the forthcoming The Biggest Bluff. It is a book about her time playing poker. And she stared us down across the table and got us to fold our use of hair gels. Although, actually, I doubled down on it. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Mike.
And now the spiel. David Shulkin, out. Out at the VA. Dr. David Shulkin. He never gets called Dr. David Shulkin. Tom Price always got called Tom Price, didn't he? I guess when your name is Tom Price, you need to gussy it up. But when you're David Shulkin, maybe people assume you're a doctor. Anyway, the guy was bounced. And it seems like he might have been wronged. Among his misdeeds, he went to Wimbledon on a Saturday when he should have been attending a conference, even though he says the conference wasn't going on a Saturday. He also failed to fully transform a gigantic bureaucracy with a massive caseload and limited resources. He did get high marks for most fair-minded government watchdogs for the progress he was making, but maybe that's the point. Government watchdogs watch government, and the forces who are replacing Shulkin at the VA want to, it is alleged, steer away from government and towards privatization. By the way, this is an aside, one of the Trump appointees with the knives out for Shulkin was Jacob Leinenkugel. If the name sounds familiar, no, it's not the super criminal from the 30th century who is vanquished. If you trick him into saying his name backwards, that is Mr. Mixelplick, DC Comics borrowing heavily from Rumpelstiltskin. Jacob Leinenkugel. His name is on his family's eponymous beer. He's a Trump donor and a political appointee now working within the VA who is plotting for Shulkin's removal, according to the Washington Post, Politico, and other sources, possibly the Beer Advocate. Well, Leinenkugel got Shulkin's removal. And let me just say, he might be an excellent backroom dealer. Perhaps Leinenkugel's vision of the VA will come to fruition and veterans will one day be served, if not overserved. But this guy's beer stinks. That is not a metaphor. I do not like his beer. His summer shandy, summer shoddy. It's frothy. It's fruity. I'm not saying this merely as a matter of opinion. It is an abomination to all suds kind. Does it seem that I am overflowing with international bitter units? Fine. If Leinenkugel were the only beer around, I would drink Zinfandel, damn it. Leinenkugel, by the way, is a wholly owned subsidiary of Miller Coors, and the VA may soon be a wholly owned subsidiary of, well, I don't know. Maybe Betsy DeVos's brother. Maybe Trump Care will become the first name in Veterans Health. You can't spell Ivanka without the VA. Maybe Trump Family Therapy Centers will be the order of the day. We do know that Ronnie Jackson, Trump's doctor, Ronnie, there's a red flag, Trump's doctor has the job now. His qualifications are he's a veteran, and he looks good in front of the cameras, and he has yet to engender the lemony wrath of Leinenkugel. But if it's the case that Ronnie Jackson was hired because the president liked the cut of his jib, his affect, his commanding presence, then how did it work with Shulkin? How did he look on TV? I got to wondering. Did Shulkin disappoint Trump in some way? Remember this famous comment Trump said of Shulkin and the phrase, actually he was gesturing towards this phrase, literally and figuratively. He was making your fired hand gesture over and over, and then he said this of Shulkin.
We'll never have to use those words. We'll never have to use those words on our David. We will never use those words on you, that's for sure.
And of course, by never, Trump meant definitely. Just like when he says everybody, he means nobody. And when he says nobody, he means everybody. Trump did fire Shulkin, but was it because Shulkin's praise wasn't full or even fulsome, as if Trump could tell the difference? So here's what I did. I went back to that June cabinet meeting when all the cabinet officers praised the big man. Here's what Shulkin said.
Mr. President, thank you for your support and commitment to honoring our responsibility to America's veterans. I know that this is personally very important to you.
Which isn't just a factual recitation of where the VA stands, but he didn't go fully, we're blessed by God to be in the same room as you. Now, at the time of this cabinet meeting, Chris Cizilla of CNN ranked every cabinet member by effusiveness. Chris Cizilla is a little like the Nickelback of political reporters, meaning, yeah, he's a bit obvious and on the nose, but I think it has become more of a cliche to criticize Cizilla or Nickelback than any piece of content actually offered by Cizilla or Nickelback deserves. Anyway, Cizilla does encapsulate the conventional wisdom, and that some version of that is usually what he gets criticized for. But, you know, I could use some conventional wisdom over the question of how over the top the praise was. So Cizilla ranked Shulkin 10th, 10th most effusive, and Shulkin got axed. The least over the top in praise was Scott Pruitt, who gave an update on the G7 and didn't really praise Trump at all. Pruitt is said at this point to be embattled, but it was also reported today that Trump gave him a vote of confidence, which of course can mean anything. But Pruitt, the least unctuous, he's still there. In fact, of all the cabinet secretaries ranked as less sycophantic than Shulkin, only Rex Tillerson is gone. But of the nine ranked as more toadying, number two Tom Price is gone, and number five Jeff Sessions is constantly being belittled, although he started off that way. Also, in the not a cabinet secretary but important guy in the White House category, there was Reince Priebus saying, "We thank you for the opportunity and the blessing that you've given us to serve your agenda and the American people." And Trump did have to use the words "you're fired" on Reince. It seems that Trump likes praise, but he hates weakness. And if he sees you as weak, then praise is going to do you no good. So the lesson is, don't position yourself to appear weak to Donald Trump, because if you do, there is no amount of sucking up that can save you. Of course, if you took the job in the Trump cabinet in the first place, more than your job needs saving. And that's it for today's show. The Gist was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé, or as we call him, the Smash Mouth of producers. Gist senior producer Mary Wilson. Ah, senior producer. We're never going to have to say you're fired to Mary. Oh, Jesus. Steve Lickteig is executive producer of Slate Podcasts. He's like the radio head of executive producer of Slate Podcasts. The Gist, something of a Dexy's Midnight Runners of afternoon commentary podcasts. Oompru-depru-dupru, and thanks for listening.